We got next up on the slate. We're going to hear from a couple young farmers. There was a young farmer trip to New Zealand, and we're going to have John Iverson and Hannah Kammeyer come up and discuss what they saw in New Zealand, some ideas. They grow a lot of the similar crops. If you're not familiar, John Iverson is a family farmer. He grew up on a farm in Woodburn, Oregon, and he graduated from Oregon State, and he continues to farm in Woodburn with Iverson Family Farms up in Woodburn. Hannah Kammeyer grew up with her family and on a family farm in Estacada, Oregon. Historically a grass seed farm, the Kammeyers now produce hay, grains, Christmas trees, and cattle. And after earning a degree in agricultural business management at Oregon State University, Hannah has been working at OSU as the cereal variety outreach coordinator for OSU's wheat breeding program. So I think the two of them are going to come up and give us some ideas that they found out from New Zealand. So John and Hannah.
Thanks, man. Well, good morning. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the trip we did. We did it, there's 15 growers, 10 growers, 3 field men, and then 2 Oregon State employees. We went down last year about this time. The way this came about is in 2015, I got a call and said, hey, there's a bunch of New Zealand young farmers coming up to the area. Could you find people for them to stay with? They want to do what they called homestays, where they broke up and stayed with farmers for a couple days, and I helped arrange that. And after that was done, they kind of toured the whole valley, and they were actually going all the way across the U.S. and just looking at different farms, ended up in North Carolina. And after I was done, I got a hold of Nicole Anderson and said, hey, why aren't we doing something like that and touring different protection areas around the world? And so Nicole and I kind of got together and helped plan this trip down to New Zealand. So like I said, we went last December. It was a 10-day trip. Part of the reason we kind of wanted to start with New Zealand is if Oregon was a country, it would be New Zealand. Roughly the same size in area, roughly the same size in population. Climate's pretty identical. GDP is about the same. There's a few differences. Rainfall-wise, they get roughly the same amount every month, as opposed to we have the wet winters, dry summers. But they're growing a lot of the same stuff as we are. Presentation just before us, talking a lot of grass seed production, a lot of clover production, and that's kind of where we focused while we were down there. Just so you don't know, if New Zealand's on the 45th parallel, just in the southern hemisphere. So, like I said, when we went down in December, it'd be kind of like early June for us. And so stuff had just finished pollinating. There's still some orchard grass pollinating. But there was kind of that calm before the storm, before they really got busy. And part of the reason we went when we did is they have their big field day, which we're going to talk about here next.
Okay, so from here, I'll give you a quick overview of everything we got to see while we were on the trip, starting with the crops field day. That was one of the first things we did. But before I get to that, I'd like to speak on the organization that organizes that trip. They were also very helpful in planning other stops while we were down there, and that's FAR. So that's the Foundation of Arable Research. They do applied research. They're an applied research organization responsible to the New Zealand growers. And that last part, responsible to the New Zealand growers, is really true in the sense that they're funded through an arable commodity levy. This levy is actually voted on every 5 years. If you're at the extension presentations in the fall, there is a researcher from the FAR organization, and he actually mentioned one of the livestock levies got voted down. So they really do have to be accountable to their farmers and do research that's useful to them. They use their funds and contribute those to research programs, obviously their own, but as well as other government researchers and universities. And I was actually, okay. So as I mentioned, we got to see a huge field day the first day that's put together by FAR. It's called the Crops Field Day, and it's FAR's key South Island field event. And they present both FAR's research as well as industry research trials. They bring in speakers from around the world, and that's why you see on the far left, Nicole Anderson, our very own, presenting at the field day. And then they have our first taste of what you might consider European humor. The tagline to the guy in a bathtub of Fruit Loops is bathing in disease-free cereals. So it's kind of interesting for us to see.
That was a BASF at their booth. So Bart, if you're gonna put on this same thing, please get a model.
And then I was actually going to use the pointer on this one. For the next one, let's see here. Okay, so I scan this map out of the flyer that they gave us for the field day to show you kind of to what scale this field day is. So in the center there, you can see their tent. Behind Nicole, you see a tent. And then all the way behind this group listening to the presenter over there, there's the tent in the far distance. So I was hoping this could kind of be indicative of the scale of how big this field day is. In addition, there's this section at the top, and this is the sponsorship area. So that's where we saw the guy in the bathtub of cereals. That's where both of these pictures at the top are. This is where the sponsors like BASF, Syngenta, and other companies get to have their own little trials to show off their products. They have tents with lots of free food and gifts. So it's not anything like I've seen at a field day in Oregon, at least.
So they kind of had it broken up with different sessions you could choose to go to. One of the ones I went to is nature versus nurture, what's driving wheat yields. New Zealand, like I said, like us, but they warm up a lot slower. It's kind of a maritime climate. They have some of the highest wheat yields in the world. They had the world record till recently, which just got broke. But FAR had their trials, and they're really ambitious. They have their 20 tons by 2020 program, so that equates to 302 bushels. That's their target by 2020, is what they're trying to shoot for. The data they were showing, it doesn't look like they're quite get there, but they're really aggressive on trying to get those wheat yields up. The trials, while we were there, their average yield was 188 bushels, with the top trial at 202 bushels. Like I said, I got the world record up there. They have a couple growers that are each year are competing to get that. And so the talk was pretty interesting. So they were talking, is it wheat breeding or is it better practices? And what they found is kind of both. Through their breeding, they're getting better varieties, but it's also the management practices they're practicing down there are helping achieve those yields. From there, we got picked up for homestay. So like I said, what we kind of arranged here for them, those growers, we did there. So our group kind of got broken up. In groups of twos or threes, and we spent a couple days on farm with growers, which was nice because you actually are with a grower your age and you're touring their farm. You can ask them all these questions, real intimate with what we're doing. The guy I stayed with up left, top left there, showed us how to crutch sheep, which I've never done before, so you're shaving all the wool off the back end. It was an interesting experience for us.
And then the center picture is from the homestay that I went to. The silo there, something you might see in the Midwest, but not usually here in Oregon, and that is for their grass seed to keep it dry. Similarly to the right, this is a seed dryer that's being constructed. It's probably done by now. And again, they might get summer rains when they're harvesting that grass seed, so they need to have a way to dry that. I also, at least at my homestay, had the conversation with our farmer. He did come to Oregon, so we got to see kind of the differences. And he mentioned that in New Zealand, there's a lot more vertical integration. So the farmer's responsible for farming, another person's responsible for trucking, harvesting, and et cetera. And he thinks that Oregon farmers really stress themselves out by trying to do it all. And John Iverson had the pleasure of being there for a whole summer harvest. Yep. And we kind of had a conversation that he saw a similar kind of comparison of stress levels between farmers in Oregon and New Zealand that I thought was really interesting. Yeah,
definitely a more laid-back approach down there. Mm-hmm. One of the stops we went down there was South Pacific Seeds. They grow a lot of specialty seed. And this is kind of the area we were. We were kind of based out of the Ashburton area for most of the trip. So these are just a list of some of the different seeds they're growing down there. A good chunk of it was company harvest down there. They worked really closely with their growers because they really want to make sure that when they're getting that seed off, they get good yields, and so the grower's happy and they're happy. And it was really interesting. They have fight birds really hard, so a lot of the seeds actually had to be bird netting at certain times, and it's just a huge expense, but the company helps with that, maintain that they have good production of seed. One of the questions I wanted to know when I got down there is what's the battle with canola? And we asked the question, he did not really want to talk about that. It was kind of a touchy subject there, as it is here. He said there used to be a gentleman's agreement. There's two rivers there, and in between the two rivers, no one grew canola. He says the price of canola has been pretty poor down there, and so it hasn't really been an issue, but it's definitely something they've struggled with as well.
So we went to a company called PGG Wrightson, which is a huge company down in New Zealand. They're involved in breeding, research, as well as real estate, finance, and some other assets. We just got to really see the breeding and research side. I personally got to break away for an afternoon with their wheat breeder, and I got to see some of the similarities and differences in their breeding programs here in Oregon versus down there. Of course, they're battling some of the same diseases, such as septoria and stripe rust, so to see their selection process to how they're fighting that was a good takeaway for me. In addition, and probably most importantly, was conversations about our genetic material we have and potentially doing a germplasm exchange so we can exchange some of that resistance and bring the yield potential, resistance, and some of those other things into each other's breeding programs.
One of the things that they talked about that I thought was probably one of the most interesting things on the trip is novel endophyte. He kind of joked with us. He says, you know, go to Oregon, you guys always talk your endophyte hot, really hard, and then when it comes time to sell your straw, you say, well, I don't have an endophyte. He was talking about how important it is for them in selecting. They do a lot of breeding for endophyte, where novel endophyte, where it's safe for cattle, but they still get the benefits of having it in the grass. And so we started asking all these questions about our endophytes, and I honestly couldn't answer any of them. But he said, you could really solve your goose problem, your slug problem, probably by breeding the right endophyte in there. And that got me thinking that could be a pretty good approach. Is if we could get something that geese wouldn't eat, I mean, your golf courses, your airports are going to really want that seed because they won't have to fight it. I won't have to fight it in the production field. I was talking about this when I got back, and someone said, so that means the slugs wouldn't eat your grass, but they'd eat all your poa? And like, so, I mean, it was something, it was really interesting. So on the right there is their seed cooler. And he said, they don't deliver the seed until the grower is gonna has the tractor in the field that day. And it comes right out of the cooler, goes right in the tractor. He says, you lose that endophyte if that seed's in dry storage or warm storage more than a couple days. So they're really tight with, you gotta be in the field ready to go, and they'll bring the seed out, put it in the drill. And then they're really managing their nitrogens and their fungicides really to take care of that endophyte for the end user. Dr. Alan Stewart's the one that gave that talk. He's the guy right in the middle here. Wealth of knowledge, but he's going to be, the plan is right now is to have him speak next year at this meeting here, and he's going to talk about how they're breeding for endophyte in New Zealand and some practices that they're achieving.
So one of the more technologically advanced stops we made was at Greenvale Farms, and it was also one of the more scenic, which is why I added the picture to the bottom left. You got to see those beautiful mountains in the background the whole time. As far as the technology, we got to see how they implement some of that weed seeker technology that you might have seen here in the Willamette Valley, as well as variable rate fertilizer and irrigation. And we've probably all heard of or seen variable rate fertilizer by now, but the irrigation was what was really interesting to me. So the top right picture is what that center pivot looks like. It has that monitor with each section of the field kind of mapped out differently. And then as you can see on the bottom right, there's two different crops there with a fence line in between. And as that pivot's going over the fence line from one crop to another, each one of those sprayer heads can adjust, either turn off, on, give a different rate. So that's something that I at least haven't seen in production, and it was really interesting. And then our last stop on the trip was the Omarama Station, where we got to see a Merino wool operation. None of us on the trip are shepherds, so that was really interesting from an educational standpoint, but it was also a great conversation. I think this picture is more indicative of the character this guy or this producer has than anything I can say. It's not every day you see someone pull out the knife on their hip to point at their logo on their shirt. A big personality there. And he got to talk about some differences in employment practices that he has. So he really prefers his employees to just stick around for 2 to maybe 5 years. He thinks that it's beneficial to have people eager to learn, always learning new things, and then once they get comfortable in that position, it's time for them to move on and take on a new challenge. I know a lot of producers here, we try and keep on 2 good employees as long as we can. He also mentioned agritourism, how he tries to be involved in that, as well as bridging the gap between consumers and producers. And I thought it was interesting to hear that this is a problem in other countries as well, not something that we're just battling here in the U.S. or especially in Oregon.
So some of the big takeaways that we kind of got from the trip, and we kind of did a survey when we got back, is they're really in tune with their growth regulator, nitrogen, and water use. Those three things, they're really trying to find the perfect balance, and it depends on the variety they're growing. They're all really in tune with that. Their soils are a little more sandy, things dry out real quick, but most every farm has a moisture meter somewhere on the farm, and they're really tracking their water usage and adjusting their nitrogen rate and their PGR rate according to how much rainfall and how much irrigation they're putting on. Really trying to find that perfect balance of the three. One of the things I found interesting is they said if you're trying to increase yield and you have one more dollar to spend, they said use it on PGR. If you have $1 you need to cut, they said cut your nitrogen. Their equivalent to fertilizer rates is they were getting close to 200 pounds of nitrogen per acre, and they found that they're actually getting higher yields as they decrease their nitrogen usage. Their grass is a little bit different. It's a lot more growthy than our turf-type perennial ryegrass. Their perennial ryegrass is more forage type, so it's growthier, but I thought that was pretty interesting. And like I said, the endophyte thing, I think that could be a real key for the valley here. If we could figure out that novel endophyte, I think we could solve a lot of the problems we're already having here if we got that figured out. Crop rotations, they were pretty intense, the crop rotations. Perennial ryegrass is a one-year crop for them. They're also sheeping it pretty heavy, rotating with a lot of clovers. Wheat's been really big down there right now. Obviously, if you're getting 200 bushels the acre wheat, looks pretty good, even when the price is not so great. And some of the different tools they had down there was, you know, doing everything the same, but just a little bit different. So in the future, we're actually looking at trying to do a trip to Denmark, another big seed-producing region in the world. Obviously, from the speaker before us, you saw how much seed production's in Denmark. And so we're trying to plan a trip again, a bunch of young farmers to go down, or go up to Denmark and take a look at their practices and see what we can bring back. They have some other challenges they're fighting there, and so a lot of that stuff they're fighting, nitrogen or nutrient budgets and restricted chemical use is probably coming down the pipe here. And so trying to figure out how they're dealing with those problems before we actually have to fight them ourselves. And so we're looking at possibly 2018, 2019. It's probably looking more like 2019 right now. But if you're interested, please get a hold of me or Nicole or Hannah here, and we'll get you on the email list and try to keep you up to date with where we're at on that. Also, we'd really like to thank the sponsors that helped pay for the trip, get these people down there. Seed League was a big sponsor as well. They really helped us with a big scholarship to get help cut the cost for growers to go down and go on this trip. So I'd like to thank everybody on the list here that it really made the trip possible. Any questions?
I will add, it's really hard to compress a 10-day trip into a 15-minute presentation, so I'll be around at lunch. I'm sure John will as well. So if anyone wants to talk, there's also a few other people in the audience that I've seen that was on the trip, and I'm sure we'd all love to talk about it more if you have any questions.
Awesome. Thank you.